You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
In stereo. 5 minutes past 10. We are in the middle hour, and what we are going to be doing for the remainder of the hour is look at all matters ANC, the elective conference happening in 2 weeks. We have seen a number of their provinces declaring their preferred candidates, the PGCs making those decisions, and joining us in our 702 studios, Govan Whittle of the Mail and Guardian. How you doing, Gov? It's been a while, brother.
Yeah, it has been. It's good to be back, man.
The one amazing political reporter and hip-hop head, I'm sure you appreciate some Caspanol verse there, just a little bit.
Yeah. Much love to Casper. Well done. Congratulations. Making history. Hip-hop is taking over.
And also with us in studio, Professor Mdebisi Ndletshana. Prof, I hope you're well, sir.
Hey, good morning. I'm well. I hope you had water this morning.
That is so unnecessary, Prof.
I had to have that dig. Yeah, sorry, man.
Thanks. Gents, we are sitting at a very interesting time in our country. We are 2 weeks away from the elective conference. We've seen a number of provinces who have declared, of course, not all of them. I haven't heard anything about Limpopo, and we'll get to that. But the majority of the provinces so far making it clear on whose side they are on. And what we are going to be doing for this hour is actually unpack it as much as we can. And you're more than welcome to be part of this conversation with Professor Ndletshana and with Govan Whittle on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. To paint a broad picture, Govan, starting with you, I know that you've been looking at all provinces. As it stands, who is on whose side?
Well, Koketso, as it stands, we have some results that are in, and I think the provinces to look at Limpopo and KZN, which are going to be announcing their preferred candidates this weekend. But Cyril Ramaphosa's got four provinces that have officially endorsed him to replace Jacob Zuma as the president of the ANC. It's the Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng, while Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma has the Free State, the Northwest, officially in Mpumalanga, because the unity counts as an abstention, and then we're going to see what happens in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal today. But in terms of ANC membership and areas where the bulk of the ANC membership is located, Dr. Dlamini Zuma at this point has more provinces with bigger membership that are backing her.
Prof, do these numbers as they stand actually matter? Is it a guaranteed that come the time that delegates do vote at NASREC that the numbers will reflect where they are right now ahead of the conference?
Well, the numbers are quite important, but I think there are a couple of things that we need to keep in mind as well as we look at them, in that initially, before the PGMs were convened, you had a list of authenticated or eligible branches of the ANC that were allowed to hold PGMs. But after the PGMs were held, you then realized that quite a number of them did not actually convene. So a number of them were excluded. So as you look at the totals, you must realize that quite a number of them were excluded, and some of them, unfairly so, through all manner of shenanigans as part of excluding certain delegates. Also, as you look at the totals, some are exclusive of disputes. Mm. A number of provinces are having to go through disputes that have been launched by branches that were prohibited from convening their PGMs, and they were prohibited deliberately as a way of swaying the outcome of the PGM nominations. So those are the couple of things that we need to look at. But also, finally, on this point, these are, of course, nominations. ANC people are nominating candidates for elections in December. And so you still have the actual voting on the day. Mm-hmm. So the delegates will be most likely persuaded by a number of people. They are going to be the subject of intense attention. And that's a worrying thing, because we know in KZN especially, where a number of people who have been assassinated, some of them have been delegates or people who were considered that they are likely to be delegates. So it's given the climate, especially in KZN, one fears that the identity of one as a delegate might be a license to be killed. So there are quite a number of... There was a point when you wouldn't consider that possibility, but given what has been happening in KZN today, I think anything is possible.
Mm. Let's go through them province by province, if we may, Govan, starting with the Eastern Cape. I mean, you mentioned that it is the PGC coming out saying that they're nominating Ramaphosa. What? It was 423 branch nominations, NDZ only 61. It was also considered to be a possible stronghold province for example, Lindiwe Sisulu. It was quite embarrassing, as some have said, where she received, particularly in deputy president, receiving the most votes, but not as president. What does the Eastern Cape look like, and what are the dynamics within the Eastern Cape that would have a Ramaphosa nomination, and what would happen at the conference?
Yeah, I think in the Eastern Cape, it's very important to consider that the structure there just came from a very bruising provincial conference. I had an opportunity to attend that conference. And if anything, the loyalty to provincial leadership or the competing loyalties was laid bare there. So even after that provincial conference, with the new chairman, Oscar Mabuyane, and the PEC endorsing Cyril Ramaphosa to take over as president, there still wasn't any official endorsement until the PGC, right? But we did expect the regions there, the Jotgabi region, the Amatola region, and the Nelson Mandela Bay region, to be a base of support for Dr. Dlamini Zuma. And instead, what we saw was an overwhelming show of support for Cyril Ramaphosa, but also for the people that are aligned with his slate. I think the reason why the Eastern Cape numbers came back like that is because the three regions that I just mentioned, Jotgabi, Amatola, and Nelson Mandela Bay, and the regional officials in that area have been in a fight essentially with the new PEC. They're very much aligned to the Premier Phumulo Masualle, and they're very much aligned to the short-term chairperson Mandela Bay, Andile Lungisa, because he was forced to resign. And we know that they've been doing a lot of work trying to get support for Dr. Dlamini Zuma in the area, and Andile himself has said that they feel that they're being targeted in those regions because of their work. But in terms of Lindiwe Sisulu, yes, her branch is there, and yes, she received the second most amount of votes there, or nominations. But what we do see is that even though she has spent that much time in the province, Ramaphosa is still not only a favorite there, but he's still seen as the only possible contender to Dr. Dlamini Zuma in the area, and a real winner in terms of whether he'll be able to come out in conference. I mean, in regions such as Sara Bartman, where we do know that Lindiwe Sisulu has support base, Ramaphosa picked up nearly all of the presidential nominations. Sisulu,
she actually received just one vote from the Sara Bartman region. Yeah. And on that, because there are a number of people who felt, and like you said, Govan, that she had the support in the Eastern Cape. There is the Sisulu legacy matter from the Eastern Cape, a number of people would have drawn a conclusion that because of that and because of her own legacy as a struggle veteran, Lindiwe Sisulu would perform much better. But having just one vote from a branch, yes, it is just a branch. What does that say about the views of ANC members in relation to Lindiwe Sisulu, Prof?
Well, I think it shows consistency on the part of many of them, because remember there was a huge talk around 2007 when Jacob Zuma was elected president of the ANC. What seemed to have been adopted as a principle at the time was that the deputy president must become the president of the ANC. And obviously some members of the ANC have a much longer memory than others, because they have kept to that as a principle, even though it was never officially adopted. But that was the slogan upon which Zuma mobilized his own campaign. And a number of people still believe in that. And for them, therefore, it was quite natural that Cyril Ramaphosa should simply be made president of the ANC. So that was part of it, perhaps largely part of it. On Also, I think Lindy was campaign stumbled a little bit. I think there were some unflattering comments that she made about Gwede Mantashe, mm-hmm. where he was in the 80s, this and that. That opened up the whole tension in the ANC of exiles and inzas and who struggled more than the other, whether you went to prison or not, all that kind of nonsense. And it was unsmart or quite absurd of her to make that comment, especially if you are looking to garner support in the Eastern Cape where Gwede Mantashe is king. That's Gwede's country. Yeah. So it was always inevitable that there would be some kind of a backlash, especially because I think some of the apologies that she issued were purported to be apologies did not quite come across as apology. So that was the unraveling, yes, partly because the principle of deputy becoming president and also ill-considered comments from her, I think, alienated quite a number of people in the Eastern Cape.
There is a need for us at some point to talk about whether we are seeing a specific pro-Cyril Ramaphosa support in the provinces that have nominated him, or rather an anti-Jacob Zuma position. But across the border in the Western Cape, it's sad that one has to go through this very quickly, but the reality is that this is the province that has got, what, 3.8% of the party's total membership. Yeah. Does it really matter, Govan, with them saying that they are supporting Ramaphosa of 145 branches, 121 supporting Ramaphosa?
I made the point in one of my other pieces that the Western Cape and Northern Cape's delegation to conference combined is smaller than the Free State's delegation to conference combined. But, you know, I was lucky enough to go and attend some of the provincial gatherings where they were addressed by national leaders. The compliment that they always get is that they're very strong on policy, that they're able to come with proper policy proposals, that they debate well. Northern Cape particularly is commended for putting forward great policies on beneficiation. When I was there at the provincial conference, they also came through with radical new ideas, though I think they will say there was a socio-economic radical transformation ideas. But the endorsement from the Western Cape, specifically because even though Dlamini Zuma got a small number of nominations there, the fact that the delegates to conference are still chosen in branch meetings, for example, in the Dala Oma and Borland region, where the regional officials are overseeing it, just because there's an overwhelming endorsement or nomination of the deputy president coming from the PGCs or the branches, it doesn't mean that that will carry through as a united voting bloc at conference. We also know that the Youth League in the Western Cape are challenging the PEC's authority to convene the Regional Congress of the Dala Oma region. And the Dala Oma region is the biggest region in the Western Cape, so presumably we'll be sending the biggest number of, or the largest number of delegates to the conference. So, even though it's a small province, they're not going there with a united voting bloc. I don't think the Northern Cape is doing that either, particularly because the Francis Baard and the Namakwa regions are also challenging the PEC there. So though these were early wins for the deputy president in getting the official nomination, but there certainly are fractures there which can't be glazed over.
We're in conversation with Govan Whittle of the Mail and Guardian, as well as Professor Ngwebisi Nletshana, talking the presidential race ahead of the ANC's elective conference in December or in the next 2 weeks. Be part of the conversation, 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702 at 19 minutes past 10.
702 and Cape Talk.
At 22 minutes past 10, Kokezo Sachani in for Eusebius Mekhaiza. We continue with Govan Whittle of Mail and Guardian and Professor Ngwebisi Nletshana, taking your calls, 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Tabiso is in Soweto. Good morning.
Hi, Kokezo, how are you?
All right, Ndati, go ahead.
Thank you. Listen, I think I want to appreciate Govan Whittle's analysis of the whole thing, because, you know, from the media, we've been getting, you know, the picture that all the provinces that are supporting Ramaphosa are united, you know. And then it's only the provinces that are supporting NDZ, you know, that are troublesome. Mm. Because I can tell you that if you look at the Eastern Cape, for instance, this guy was won, the PEC now. He's not getting pleasure from the Masuele guys, you know. Mm. I read an article somewhere where they say that they don't even attend this meeting. Mm. So the media, I think for me, they're taking a position. And they want to give us a picture of, you know, Ramaphosa being winning and not being, you know, being a disadvantage, so to speak. So I'm saying that we didn't even know, for instance, you know, Ekogeza, that the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape combined, they are still smaller than the Free State.
Free State,
know?
Yeah.
For me, that is very much telling, you know. I think what I need to ask the guests is that for South Africa, when you look at South Africa broadly, without looking at the conference, I'm not trying to downplay it. What is their view about, you know, me saying that all these two candidates are very controversial candidates, and then, you know, the position that must be taken by South Africa at large, maybe moving towards 1919, is to just move beyond the ANC, you know, and come with something fresh, like your coalition government or something like that. Because for me, I don't think that, you know, even though the media want to portray Ramaphosa as a better candidate, I don't disagree, I don't agree with it. I think that he's just as bad as other candidates, if not worse. So we need to move beyond Ramaphosa. The media must stop feeding him to us as a person who's going to, you know, improve the economy. There was a caller, just to conclude, Kogezo, during Stephen Hrota's show, you know, that caller was very anecdotal about, you know, the business and the share that Ramaphosa got, you know, that were not even mentioned by the media. And then that caller, when he said the white media, you know, there was discomfort, you know. So just to finish up, I want to know that if the media is a contested terrain, you know, and then I can tell you that the media has been biased towards MDZ, and the media has never really, you know, give us a balanced view, this South African media.
All right, got it, Tabiso.
Sure.
No, got it. Thank you very much. Prof, let's have you respond to Tabiso. A couple of points that he made there, the impression that is created, or even you could argue an agenda in the media presenting Cyril Ramaphosa as the ultimate winner, but also an area that he touches on that I've always questioned, this idea that it is a fait accompli that come 2019, it will be the ANC that will be ruling, whereas we're not looking at who else actually could be governing, not ruling.
When you look at the candidature of individuals, you have to be factual and honest. It doesn't mean that when you say a nice thing about this person, you have to say a nice thing about the other person. You have to point out all their strengths and weaknesses. That would be an honest assessment. The problem with Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma candidature is that she's massively associated with the incumbent, the president of the ANC. That association by marriage, and also given the people that are involved in a campaign, I mean, they are massively unimpressive. Carl Niehaus, Batabile Dlamini, Kebi Patswe, all these unsavory characters, right? So you have that company that she keeps. You also have the fact that I've dubbed her candidature as an insincere candidature. Someone who's by and large been a centrist in ANC politics, a technocrat. And wants us to believe that at 68 she can become a populist raveling Malema. I mean, that's ridiculous. So for me, that candidature has been very inauthentic, insincere from the very beginning. That's what I've been saying.
But it's not the first time, though, Prof, that we see NDZ running for ANC positions. When was it when she was running as deputy, running for the deputy president position? So is it that insincere, though?
No. She was a lot more honest in 2007 when she stood alongside Thabo Mbeki. It was a moderate centrist candidature that we've always known her to be. You see, this is the thing about politics, is that you play your entire life in public. So you create a record, a profile that cements itself in people's mind. So you can't show up the next day and say, oh, by the way, everything else I've been in the last 24 years has been false. Today I'm a populist, I'm a radical. I mean, that's nonsense. So these are the weaknesses, at least that I've been pointing out. I'm not sure if I can call myself part of the media. But nonetheless, that's what I've been pointing out and saying, Cyril, because of his relative newness, his anti-corruption stance, and the fact that he speaks close to business, his language is moderate, understandable, he has a public appeal, he has an incredible history. He's a better candidate for the ANC, especially in terms of electability in 2019, right? So I say all these things. So having said this, then you I wouldn't understand anyone saying that we've been biased just because we've said more good things about Cyril than Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, because factually, that's how their profiles hold up. You know, this idea that still, you have to equalize good things, I mean, it's just absurd.
Just on that, with a minute to go before Eyewitness News headlines, and I can't wait for us to also deal with Mpumalanga and Didi Mabuza. But Govan, quickly, is there an opportunity or a way in which the NDZ campaign can separate itself from the Jacob Zuma legacy and the issues that the Prof has mentioned?
Well, I think it's too late to separate itself from the president by now, and I think that's what the provincial leaders were confronting the president about at that meeting with the presidential candidates and secretaries, saying, "President, how can you call for unity? You're not being genuine, because on January 8th you endorsed Dr. Dlamini Zuma to be the replacement of yourself as president." So that's what the president has been called out for. I think the remarks from Dr. Dlamini Zuma herself, saying it's unfair that she's being associated with her the president, haven't gone far enough to disconnect herself, especially in the minds of branches, because that's what we're seeing in the nomination patterns and justification for the way people are nominating as well. And we've also got, just to add, and Koketso, Andrew Mlangeni, one of the most senior or most veteran leaders of the ANC now, also saying that he prefers Deputy President Ramaphosa, and he prefers Minister Lindiwe Sisulu as his deputy, and that he doesn't think Dr. Dlamini Zuma should become president because of that relationship with the president.
Govan Whittle and Professor Mthembisi Ndleja now continue with us.
702 and Cape Talk.
And 25 minutes to 11, still with us, Govan Whittle and Professor Mthembisi Ndleja. Now we're talking the ANC presidential race. Prof, in looking at Mpumalanga, very interesting developments there, where we are seeing at least the position articulated by Premier and ANC Chair David Mabuza, giving both the CR17 and NDZ campaign 2 weeks to abide by the demands of a unified slate. What's happening there?
Well, let's start with the idea of unity. I think the ANC faces very clear challenges today. You have a patronage faction that is determined to use the state as a source of income, livelihood for themselves, and they're willing to employ all manner of tricks to get there. And you also have a reform-minded faction, Cyril and them, who are talking quite tough against corruption, saying you need organizational renewal and all those things. So these are clearly contrasting positions. So if you say you must unify, what exactly do you mean? Do you mean you should adopt middle ground? The ANC doesn't need middle ground. The ANC needs a complete rupture with how it has been doing things in the last 10 or so years. That's what the diagnostic report that Gwede Mantashe tabled at the policy conference a few months ago was saying. You don't need to sugarcoat things. I think you need to come up. You need bold and decisive leadership. And Gwede Mantashe said this thing a little while ago, that you cannot unify behind wrong things. Because if you unify, you are forced to merge two positions and reach compromises. So your message is not as clear as it would have been. It's very fuzzy. And the ANC needs a clear message of organizational renewal, that they're doing things afresh. And unfortunately for them, you see, Titi Mabuza is bad news for the ANC. Titi Mabuza represents everything that is bad about the ANC. I mean, there are two interesting books that have been written about politics in that province, one by Sizwe Samayende and another by Zilikazi Wa Africa. And both of them portray Didi as some kind of a baron, a quasi-gangster of sorts. Right?
And there is that, Prof. I mean, the legend of Didi Mabuza, which is why, in understanding that legend, trying to make sense of his play in this whole idea of a unified slate. What is Didi Mabuza actually playing at? And I'm looking at some of the words that he used in the interview that he had with the City Press newspaper, citing the fallout from Polokwane Mangaung, but he says that should be a mixed slate so that there is a semblance of organization. Interesting choice of words, but again, in staying with the legend of Didi Mabuza, what is his end game, if we're able to speculate?
Well, he wants to be part of the winning team, you know, Don King type. You always leave the ring with the champion. That's what he wants, so that his problems don't come to visit him in future. I mean, if you read those two books by those journalists, they are quite unflattering about this fellow. So it would be very good for a winning candidate of the ANC to win without Didi Mabuza's support. Because if you do, if he takes you over the finishing line, so that would be akin to making a pact with the devil. It ties your hands. The ANC will not transform as radically as it ought to. And the message become muddled. You can't be talking clean government with Didi Mabuza as deputy president of the ANC. The message is just muddled.
Govan, looking at and digging into the branches in Mpumalanga, does Didi Mabuza have full control, or is there an opportunity, at least from branch level, for there to be some sort of difference in what happens with the delegations going to Nasrec?
Well, I think the prof makes a good point about the reputation of the premier in government, but I think that one extends to the ANC itself. And whether or not Didi Mabuza has complete control of Mpumalanga will, as a matter of fact, be tested today, because we know Matthew Sposa is trying to challenge the outcome of that PEC, of that PGC, which nominated Unity, in court today, and apparently going to present some evidence of instructions for the branches to nominate Unity and essentially abstain. So that will have to bring some sort of evidence about his control in Mpumalanga to the table. But if we look at the way that the branches in Mpumalanga nominated and what preceded the PGC during the nominations were, first of all, the investigation by the Treasurer General's Office of the ANC into the collusion of ANC officials and bank officials to secure fake stamps and therefore basically submit fraudulent membership for the verification. That investigation has thrown up 27 branches in Limpopo, but also a sizable number of the Mpumalanga membership. And the Secretary General's office has not said yet who is to blame for that and who, which action will be taken. In terms of the chairman's influence over the branches, we do know that Matthew Sposa was one of the first people who said that Didi Mabuza is giving an instruction to the branches to write Unity on the forms instead of actually nominating their candidate. And that is part of a bigger play to walk to the December conference with the 223 Unity votes in hand and use that as a bargaining chip during the proposed constitutional amendments to see how much support he actually has from the other two camps. So there's a lot of talk about David Mabuza's influence over the ANC branches, but I think the evidence of whether he wields that support will firstly could come out today when Matthew Sposa goes to court. It will have to come out in the disputes and the outcome of the investigation into the collusion with banks to submit fraudulent membership. And then we will have to see a power move by the MP chairperson at the conference itself when those constitutional amendments are being tabled. And that is, I mean, from the Mail and Guardian side and the people that we're speaking to, that is where the actual trading and the balance of forces will be laid bare, is during those constitutional amendments at the conference when Mpumalanga essentially has a huge delegation and has the power to kind of negotiate with the two camps and make sure that their preferred constitutional amendments are passed and then give them the support back when it comes to the candidates.
Be part of the conversation with Prof. Ndlejana and Govan Whittle on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. Staying with Mpumalanga, Prof, there is a long-standing issue of the battle between Matthew Sposa and Didi Mabuza. We've been dealing with this as a country for a while now, but is there any power that Sposa holds to in any way sway or even challenge this legend of Didi Mabuza?
Well, I mean, Kevin and I were talking earlier, saying the votes that were tagged unity, there is nothing really, they didn't spoil the total count. They were regarded as spoiled ballots, so they were discarded. So the ballots that were ultimately counted were valid ballots. So there is no way that Matthew can nullify the PGC in Mpumalanga because everything was done above board. What he can possibly do, obviously, is to expose these shenanigans that Kevin has been pointing out to. Because we've always known that nothing happens in Mpumalanga without Didi Mabuza saying so. Right. So the good thing about court cases is that they expose all the dirt. Even though Matthew doesn't have a case per se, but it would be good for us to know how it is that 223 branches in Mpumalanga would nominate someone or something called Unity when there is no person with that name, not even a nickname called Unity in the ANC. What is that?
Prof, just to come in there, I think also important to say that Dr. Zwelim Khize, when I asked him what he made of the nominations of Unity in Mpumalanga, he essentially said that he counts those as abstentions and that he believes that the branches who are nominating Unity are, rightly so, saying that they are prepared to compromise when it comes to candidates. So I think those statements by Dr. Mkhize and if you look at the statements by Chairperson Mabuza, they're very similar, which is an indication. I mean, Didi Mabuza has also said that he's willing to give up his deputy president's position. And if you look at the candidates that are in the race currently, it's Dr. Zwelim Mkhize, Minister Lindiwe Sisulu, and Chairperson Didi Mabuza.
So Mkhize and Mabuza are part of the same WhatsApp group.
Wow. Let's see what happens.
You know, to go back to the question of Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and what you both have mentioned, Prof and Govan, Cyril Ramaphosa, it's almost as if we do not want to or don't take the time to dig deeper into the man himself. Yes, there's all that has been said about NDZ, what she's not outright speaking out against, and what you mentioned as well, Prof, of her history and now suddenly, as you put it, wanting to be populist. But Cyril Ramaphosa himself, yes, being close to big business in this climate, while it might benefit the economy, also is a bit of an issue for him, where people have, even from his days with the establishment of the NUM, said he's always been in the pocket of white capital, and that is not necessarily a good thing. And then there is Marikana, and also the fact that, you know, if you, depending on who you believe, he threw a tantrum ahead of the inauguration of Mandela because he wasn't number two and he didn't even pitch.
Of course, yes, you're quite right. He never attended inauguration because apparently he wanted to be deputy president. There are those things about Cyril that he will have to answer for. And given the character of the ANC, that you have people who believe in socialism, who do not approve of BEE, they would quite naturally find something wrong with him being rich. But the fact that the ANC endorsed BEE, it's an ANC policy. So they are quite proud and do encourage black people to be part of business as part of de-racializing business. It's part of old ANC policies that in this phase of the National Democratic Revolution, as they say, you need to de-racialize all sectors of society, including business. They don't talk socialism. The ANC doesn't talk socialism. The allies talk socialism. So Cyril is a perfect product of ANC policies. Of course, you would find fault with that if you believe that the ANC should be a socialist party. Mm. And secondly, the ANC added to this thing of policy orientation is that it's a centrist party. It believes in both public ownership and private ownership. So to seek then to define Cyril outside of ANC politics, it's a complete misunderstanding of what ANC is. ANC intends to produce characters like Cyril because it believes that not only white people should own the South African economy. Everyone complains about that every day, that whites are still in charge. Then if you do not like that, it means you have to promote black entrance into business. And secondly, and which is very profound, by the way, is that the ANC is a mixed economy organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Cyril, just to repeat the point, it's a perfect indication of what the ANC aspires for.
At 12 minutes to 11, we'll take your calls. Look at your SMSs as well on Twitter at Kokezo Sachane.
702 and Cape Talk.
At 9 minutes to 11, a few minutes still that you have to engage on what we're discussing together with Govan Whittle of the Mail and Guardian, Professor Mcebisi Ndlejana. Prof, coming back to you and looking at what we are still to hear from KZN and Limpopo. KZN specifically talk at least the idea presented that what we are going to see is an NDZ nomination. But we know that there have been issues within KZN itself, particularly following the now disputed PEC results.
Yes, I mean, KZN is very troubled. There were even reports earlier saying that of the nominations in Etekwini, for instance, Cyril received none, which is quite strange. And apparently in Pietermaritzburg, he only received one. So this is a deputy president of the ANC who, and if you look at Durban, the former mayor there, James, I forget his surname.
Umalo,
yes, had won as mayor there, I think once or twice, probably twice. Mm. And he is lobbying for Cyril, and to think that his support wouldn't have gone Cyril's way is quite unbelievable. So there are clear indications that people have been employing all sorts of underhanded tactics. There are quite a number of disputes in KZN. But it's not surprising, really. It's not surprising because even the 2015 conference, as you know, as the court later ruled, was highly contested. I mean, that conference, I think, was failed to convene for about four or so times, right? Mm-hmm. That was the extent of the divisions in Durban or even the province as a whole. So it's not surprising that it has come to where it is now. And the killings really are just an unfortunate indication of how bad things are. So given that background, And the extreme that they have manifested themselves in by way of killings, it goes without saying that the outcome is going to be highly contested. Mm. And of course, you throw in the challenge of PEC, right? Mm-hmm. That it should be dissolved whilst the appeal is on. You have a menu there for a likely explosive scenario in that part of our country.
Mm. Let's return a call from Freedom in Johannesburg. Freedom, good morning.
Good morning, Kakotso. What I want just me to say, to emphasize, is that unfortunately, the ANC have done another massacre, have chosen the people that have no influence at all, the people that have the ambition to be in the leadership, to be the president. That's what I want to just to occupy that office and get as much as they can to loot the country. Because unfortunately, if you can see Ramaphosa, there is no way that you can forget what he has done in Marikana, how many Xhosa people that he has killed. I think the guy, Professor Ndlejana, I think he is very shy even to say that. But we need that truth to tell to the people of South Africa. Today, this guy is still using the slavery in Congo, unfortunately. And then we go again to NDZ. Zuma. Unfortunately, as she was the leader in AU, in the Ebola, what she have done in the Ebola cases in Africa, nothing. What he have done in a 1.5 migrant that are crossing the Mediterranean Sea to go to look for the green pastures, nothing. There's nothing that he have done. Even today, when the AU stand up and say, no, we have a problem of the migrant, whereby now they have been used as a slave. And then now the problem, much of the problem is that now the black people, we have been a slave during the 19th century. They are much cheaper compared You can buy a black person with only $40. That's how cheaper they are.
Yeah, so let's leave it.
Understood. People, they have no influence in everything whatever that is happening in Africa. They
got it, Freedom. No, got it. Thank you very much, Freedom. I want to make sure that we speak to Buti very quickly. Buti, go ahead.
Yeah. So, thank you, sir. I was just trying to find out from the professor when he says Cyril Ramaphosa is what is the best that the ANC is what the ANC aspires to. I want to ask him which ANC is he talking about, because there's ANC and there is ANC. I don't know what you get what I mean. The ANC of Mnomvula Mukonyani, Kimang Msadio wa communication sipeli, wa face mutandi. I mean, and then there is the ANC, the ANC.
Let's get the prof to respond to that. I mean, we laugh that the Ndlejana, but there is the ANC, and then there is the ANC. But also, you made a point earlier that, you know, actually, it's hard to separate these individuals from the party itself, because they are all part of the movement. They are all complicit in the actions and inactions and policies, or lack thereof.
Well, that tells you the extent to which the ANC has become incoherent, that people say quite shocking things that you even wonder whether these people are really ANC. If you think of Mukwanyana's statement, for instance, that it's okay that the rent falls, we can just pick it up, or investors leave the country.
She said it was a metaphor, Prof.
That's hardly a metaphor. And saying it's fine that the investors leave, we can call them back on our terms. I mean, that's such a high level of stupidity from a minister, Noha, right? So you have those comments being made, and you see also individuals like KB Paswa and all that, then you really have to wonder, if you know the ANC, familiar with ANC genealogy, tradition and history, then you have to say that indeed there are multiple ANCs.
Mm. Govan, we are yet to hear from Limpopo, KZN, of course, but you've been traversing the country. What do you think is going to happen? Are we going to see a conference collapsing?
Yeah, I think it'll get very close to what we saw in the Eastern Cape. You know, from that meeting between President Jacob Zuma, the candidates and the provincial secretaries, one of the comments made in that meeting was by Oscar Mabuyane, who he said that when the other side sees the writing is on the wall, they mustn't try to stop the conference. And I think with the nominations coming in, the writing is appearing on the wall. But the bigger problem for me, Koketso, is that once this disciplinary action is taken against all these ANC leaders, from branch leaders, regional leaders, national leaders, for colluding with banks, for rigging branch nominations, for taking money and paying off delegates, who will be left to lead the ANC? Because the level of influence of manipulation ahead of this conference has been so widespread that one really, really struggles to see how else they're going to emerge, except to say after conference that all is forgiven. Let us just try to do it from scratch, and then let's not pursue anyone. That's the most likely outcome, I think.
Let's leave it at that. Thank you very much, Govan Whittle of the Guardian, Professor Ngabisi Ndlejana as well. We are 2 weeks away. What do you make of what is to happen and the future of the country?